Hey everybody, this is Nick Mott. I'm the editor for Shared State. Working on this project over the last few months as we got ready for this huge moment in history has been a real roller coaster. And this is our last episode. We're at the end of the ride. So today, we're going to break down the results of the election for you and what they mean for Montanans. But before we do that, I want to take a minute to thank all of you for listening. Thanks for being a part of this adventure with us, for sharing the episodes with your friends and family. We've even heard of some folks making Shared State required listening in their classrooms. All that means a lot to us. The fact is, this project and future collaborations like this between our independent nonprofit newsrooms, they couldn't happen without you, the people who listen and care and engage. When we started talking about making this podcast after the primary in June, the first thing we wondered was whether this was the kind of journalism our audiences wanted to hear. We decided it was. And you showed us we were right. We were able to pull it off because enough of our listeners and readers support our work financially. You've been a key part of this. And if you want to keep helping us do this kind of reporting and storytelling, look for all the ways to make a contribution on our websites. From all of us at Montana Free Press, Yellowstone Public Radio, and Montana Public Radio, thank you. Okay, here's the show.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Did anybody get more than 3 hours of sleep?
No.
Nope.
No.
How much coffee are you drinking? And is it working?
Not yet.
I'm shaking.
I've had my usual one French press pot this morning.
So fancy, John.
Nice.
Yep.
So our listeners have heard your names throughout the podcast, but will you introduce yourselves and tell us what you do?
I'll go first. I'm Corin Cates-Carney. I'm the news director at Montana Public Radio. That means supervising our team of reporters across the state, editing stories and helping guide kind of the direction of where coverage goes.
And I'm Corin's counterpart at Yellowstone Public Radio, the NPR member station based in Billings. I'm Nikki Willett, news director over there.
And I'm John Adams. I'm the executive director and editor-in-chief of the Montana Free Press based in Helena. We're a nonprofit independent news organization, and we work in partnership with news organizations like Corin and Nikki's.
Nikki and Corin and John have been gearing up for Montana's 2020 election for months. They're going to help us break down the results, who won, and what those victories mean for Montana. Beyond the individual races, how do Tuesday's outcomes affect how we think about Montana values, especially in the months and years ahead? I'm Sarah Aronson, and this is Shared State, a podcast about what's driving Montana's 2020 election and where the outcomes could lead us. This is episode 10. Where do we go from here?
We, the people of Montana,
grateful to God for the quiet beauty of our state,
the grandeur of our mountains,
the vastness of our rolling plains,
and desiring to improve the quality of life,
equality of opportunity,
and to secure the blessings of liberty
for this and future generations,
to ordain and establish,
do ordain and establish this Constitution.
Corin, John, and Nikki are going to tell us what we need to know. Stay tuned. We're recording this around 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 4th, the day after Election Day. Sounds like Montana voters turned out in record numbers, right? Like more than any other election.
Yeah, I think even before polls closed last night, we knew that there was record numbers. Part of that is, attributed to the mail-in ballots that were coming in. And, we've also heard just the interest in this election was pretty incredible, not only in Montana, but across the nation.
Yeah, I can add to that. I think voter enthusiasm was very high. As one Republican analyst I talked to said, there's a 3-4% Republican lean in Montana that's baked in. The narrative typically is that a high voter turnout benefits Democrats, and we have seen some evidence of that in the past. But in this case, that really broke the mold, and I think that 3-4% baked-in Republican lean really was evident in the results of Tuesday's election.
So generally speaking, what happened in this year's election?
Well, I think it's a pretty good night for Montana Republicans. They swept all of the statewide offices, federal offices, and then that red wave kind of traveled down ballot as well.
And what kind of margins did we see in the races between the Steves and with Matt Rosendale and Kathleen Williams?
So as of 11 Wednesday morning, the Associated Press has Senator Steve Daines with 55% of the vote to Steve Bullock's 45% of the vote. Over in the House, Matt Rosendale, the Republican, AP's reporting 56% of the vote to him and challenger Kathleen Williams with 44%.
So what will this congressional makeup mean for Montana and for the United States?
At least looking at the U.S. House side, this means that Republicans continue their hold on Montana's lone seat in the U.S. House since 1997. That was when Pat Williams was the last Democrat to hold that office. He held it for more than a decade. In recent years, we've seen a few Republicans turn through it. More recently, Republican Greg Gianforte replaced Ryan Zinke, who had the job, and now Rosendale steps in. And looking over at the Senate, when Daines first got this seat, it was the first time in over 100 years that a Republican had it, and now Republicans have doubled down on their control there. And with Steve Daines' win here, this was a race that Democrats and Republicans were watching across the country as Democrats and Republicans fight for control of the U.S. Senate, and it was thought that if Bullock could win here, this might lead to a path of Democratic control of the Senate. And with Daines winning, that is far less likely.
You know, we don't know exactly what the final spending will be in that race, but it could be as high as $100 million spent in that Montana U.S. Senate race. And I think a lot of people thought that it was going to be a close race, and that's why it was money well spent. But like we saw in some of those seats where we had Republican incumbents being challenged by Democrats, lots and lots and lots of money was spent in those races and they came up short. And so that's going to be something that I think a lot of people are going to be trying to parse and understand going forward, is what role did money actually play in this election? The candidate that outspent his opponent in the Montana U.S. Senate race, I think for the last four or five elections, has been predictive of the winner. Outside of 2006 with John Tester defeating Conrad Burns, this was a very big spending race. Steve Bullock is one of the best financed Democrats in the country, and he lost by a significant margin. And I think there's going to be a lot of folks and political scientists wondering what exactly happened there and what did all those dollars buy.
Let's turn back to the state level races. The governor's race is at the top of this list. Republican Greg Gianforte had a decisive win over Democrat Mike Cooney. Corin, Gianforte will be the first Republican to hold the governor's office in 16 years. How did he pull this off?
So Gianforte has expressed interest in the governor's seat in Montana for several years now. He first ran in 2016, lost narrowly to Governor Bullock. Since then, he's built name recognition with two runs for the U.S. House and winning both of those. When Gianforte first ran in 2016 against Steve Bullock was considered by most to be a very strong candidate. In this time with Mike Cooney's been around state politics quite a bit, but hasn't really gained that same name recognition. And so, could be considered maybe not as familiar in the mind of voters going into this election. Gianforte, he's also in both 2016 and in this race, poured millions of dollars of his own money into this, outspending Mike Cooney, the Democrat.
And I'll just drop my two cents here about where I think the pandemic plays in. And, Governor Bullock was in a really tough spot as a governor managing a crisis, a growing healthcare crisis during a pandemic that was also an economic crisis. Exit polling from around the country really showed that people's economic concerns drove a lot of their behaviors. And I think one of the reasons Republicans did so well this year in the poll is they put the economy and economic production and economic recovery first and foremost behind public health and safety. And so I think that outweighed the pandemic. And so Bullock was in a really tough spot in that Senate race. And Cooney, his proxy, was in a really tough spot in that governor's race. I think Gianforte successfully put forward the message that a Gianforte governorship is going to reopen the economy and get Montana going again. And Cooney was very much, you know, more of the same of Bullock, which I think unfortunate for Cooney that was just really bad timing with the way that this pandemic has played out.
So knowing that Gianforte won, there's a lot on his plate in terms of coronavirus response. What can we expect going forward?
Gianforte has been pretty vocal that he really wants to tackle the economic recovery aspect of coming back out of the pandemic. And his Montana comeback plan, which was released in July, it makes a few mentions to coronavirus, but really it's drafted with much broader goals about economic recovery and, you know, reforming the tax code to make it more amenable to business interest, you know, taking out two regulations for every new one that's put in, that kind of thing. Revitalizing tourism, travel, hospitality industries through effective promotion to get those businesses reopened quickly and safely. He mentions wanting to expand reliable broadband now that the pandemic has shown Montanans that telework and telemedicine are viable options here, and just generally make Montana open for business again. And this goes along with his priorities of less government mandate, more reliance on personal responsibility. We did ask him if he had plans to remove current mask mandates and other statewide health orders. He didn't give a yes or no, saying that he didn't really want to deal in hypotheticals because we don't know where Montana will be in terms of how COVID's moving through the state in 2 months when he assumes office.
What about in terms of the health response?
Again, Gianforte hasn't really released details about how he would oversee the health response. But he did say, regardless of where we are when he assumes office, he'll rely on advice from public health professionals and community leaders. And he says he trusts Montanans to protect the health and safety of others, especially friends, family, neighbors. And he's emphasizing, again, personal responsibility over mandates. But again, details are kind of sparse here. Kaiser Health News spoke to an economist in state named Bryce Ward, and Bryce said, you know, details like how the next governor is going to support businesses through the winter if there's no federal aid approved, or how the next governor would cut the state budget if the economic crisis hits its coffers. So those kinds of details are still lacking from Gianforte. And then just if we look at him personally, in October, more than 100 health professionals sent an open letter to Gianforte criticizing him for three separate instances where he didn't follow coronavirus health guidelines, like not wearing a mask at a campaign event, saying he would hug someone at another event, attending the Let Freedom Ring concert in Helena Valley that later several cases of COVID were connected back to. Gianforte's campaign said that that letter was an attempt to politicize public health.
Gianforte has also caught some criticism from the left for supposedly supporting the idea of herd immunity. Nikki, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, herd immunity is a phenomenon that occurs when enough people catch an infectious disease and then become immune, they build up antibodies to it, that the virus can no longer effectively spread. Often with modern day science, herd immunity is achieved through vaccinations. And with COVID-19, clearly there's no vaccine, there's no sure shot cure at this point. So the idea of using herd immunity for COVID-19 would mean that many, many, many people would die from the virus before we could achieve any kind of natural herd immunity. So yeah, Gianforte has certainly come under fire from some on the left for stuff that he said about herd immunity. On two constituent phone calls over the summer in July, he mentioned conversations that he had had with a former Food and Drug Administration commissioner who talked about the idea of herd immunity, and I think had said at one point over the summer, we were expected to achieve herd immunity by the end of the year. Gianforte framed this as a good thing at the time, and that's what the piece that's catching this ire from Democrats. We asked him about that a couple weeks ago, and he said, quote, "I believe the best course forward is to reduce the spread of the virus and do everything we can to deliver a safe, reliable vaccine," end quote. And he has supported legislation that carries quite a bit of funding for vaccine development and research.
And so until Gianforte is sworn in, what can we expect from Bullock now that the election is over?
There hasn't been any kind of document that outlines a transition of disease management. I heard from a spokesperson for Bullock's office to keep in mind that a lot of the state's epidemiologists and other health public health experts that have been managing Montana up through the pandemic through now, they will continue to serve in their role. She didn't offer more details about specifically who would stay in their roles. And I should say that Gianforte's Montana comeback plan has a section about installing new leadership at state agencies, quote, where new leadership is required. And the health department is listed in that list of agencies. He's also planning a top-to-bottom review of state agencies. So kind of remains to be seen who or what Gianforte would bring in with him. However, should also point out that much of the on-the-ground public health work of identifying new cases, isolating them, tracing their contacts, that's all happening at the county or the tribal level. You know, the governor certainly serves as a figurehead and can kind of flex those executive powers to shut down schools, shut down businesses, even require masks. But all of the enforcement of that falls on local jurisdictions like your county attorney or even sometimes like the bouncer at your favorite bar. Certainly, Gianforte will be kind of guiding the state's response, but a lot of that on-the-ground stuff happens quite at the local level.
COVID-19 is just one of the major policy issues happening in Montana right now. As most Montanans probably know, we haven't had a Republican governor in quite a long time. Republicans also have a solid hold on the state legislature. So what does this mean for the upcoming session?
Greg Gianforte is going to come into the governor's office having a sizable Republican majority in both houses to work with. From my point of view, the question is going to be, who is going to set the agenda? Will it be the Republicans in the legislature, or will it be Gianforte's priorities that take center stage in January and February and March? And there's already some tension there because a group of conservative lawmakers in the House drafted a plan that leaked out last week that basically calls for resurrecting a significant number of bills that Democratic governors have vetoed over the past 16 years, ranging from abortion to tax cuts, bills that would shift money away from public schools to private and religious schools, right-to-work legislation that weakens labor unions, bills that would roll back environmental protections. So some of those issues are in line with Governor-elect Gianforte's agenda, but some may not be. And a big question for all of us to track in the next legislature is going to be whether or not Gianforte will be reacting to conservative legislative proposals or whether he'll be working with lawmakers up front to ensure that bills he doesn't want to sign don't make it to his desk.
When talking about, you know, who's going to set the agenda and the tone for the next legislative session, we've heard Nikki mention Gianforte's Montana comeback plan, and that really paints in broad strokes some of the more specific details we've seen from the legislature and how they'd like to see it play out, at least the Republicans, now that they have their first Republican counterpart in the executive office in nearly two decades. As of the day after the election, there's 780 bill draft requests in the legislature legislative hopper. These all stand as placeholders so that lawmakers can get policy ideas in line so that when the session in the state house, you know, really get chaotic, the gears are already in motion. A way to kind of think about, you know, what the gubernatorial position means now that Gianforte is control, maybe think of it as a dam. And for the past 16 years, policies that haven't, you know, met the test of the Democrat in office have been stopped. And now we can look at these bill draft requests and think, you know, what is going to get through now?
Can you give us some examples of the bill drafts or some that caught your eye?
Sure. And, you know, editor Nick Mott did a ton of help digging into these hundreds of bill drafts requests. And one that comes up that we've seen in debate in the legislature is about abortion. And for years, Republicans have pushed for restrictions on abortion. And one of the bill drafts that came up is the Montana Pain Capable Unborn Child Act. And this would make it a felony crime to perform an abortion in certain circumstances after 20 weeks. This was something that Bullock vetoed in 2019, saying he, you know, opposes restrictions on a woman's ability to make a personal medical decision. But Gianforte, you know, has said he supports restrictions on abortions. He says he's pro-life. So that's likely something we could see come up in the legislature. All these bill draft requests are just placeholders, and some of them are generally revising healthcare laws, generally revising human rights laws, generally revising economic policy. They are just placeholders, so we're going to have to really wait and see. But, you know, something else we do see very specific details on that has been vetoed in the past has to do with gun regulation. There's a school marshal program that was vetoed by Governor Steve Bullock, and that would allow, you know, concealed carry weapons in schools by these school marshals. This program would also, you know, allow these school marshals to carry outside of school places like banks, some government buildings, and bars. one of these other, you know, very specific policies we've seen Republicans support and the Democratic governor veto is allowing concealed handgun carry without a permit or a license. You know, this is something Bullock's vetoed, but we have seen this specific policy being proposed, in these bill draft requests.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the dynamics that's played out over the last 10 or 15 years in the legislature has been this self-described conservative solutions caucus. This is a group of Republicans that's been around since at least as far back as 2005. Some would call them moderates. They would call themselves conservatives who are pragmatic about passing legislation that's good for Montana. But when you had a governor who was a Democrat in office, there's this famous math that everybody talks about at the legislature. It's this formula, 51, 26, and 1. That's what it takes to get a bill into law. 51 votes in the House, 26 votes in the Senate, and the signature of the governor. And in the past, with the Democratic governor, that one, that veto, that was a really powerful tool that Democrats had in their back pocket, because legislation that got to his desk, they knew much of it that was unpalatable to the Democratic minority would get vetoed. That enabled the Solutions Caucus to allow some bills to go all the way through, to get the 51-26, because they knew that they had that veto pen. With this governor, with the new governor who's a Republican, that math equation remains the same, but what changes are the variables within that 51-26. I think one of the things that's going to be very interesting to watch in this next legislature will come down to whether or not Greg Gianforte wants to work with this Solutions Caucus group to make sure that certain bills don't get to his desk. A governor who needs to win statewide in a state that has a propensity in recent decades of electing Democratic governors may not want certain bills to have to come to his desk where he has to make a decision about signing it into law or not. And so I think that dynamic is going to be the thing to watch in the next legislature, and how Gianforte manages that formula, if you will, I think is going to be key to really how this legislature unfolds.
So one of the things we tried to do with Shared State was to highlight the issues that many Montanans care about, and also delve into subjects for those who are new to the area or new to the issues. Taking the results of this election into consideration, what do each of you think about where Montana is headed, and did anything surprise you?
So I, for one, kind of think that we tend to read a little bit too much into a moment. An election is a snapshot in time. And I think one of the things that we discovered through the course of reporting this podcast is that there are a lot of shared values, that Montanans are Montanans, whether they were born here, whether they came here. They value a lot of the same things. They value the open space, the public lands, the water, the freedoms that come with living in a place like Montana. I think what we saw in this election are that the differences are really in how we sort of perceive how we get to those values. Now, certainly there are certain individual hot button issues that are, you know, these wedge issues that we talk about in every election: abortion, guns, right to work, you name it. There are a host of issues that really sort of define the parties and the ideological division between most people. But I do think that at the end of the day, what this election showed is that there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of concern, and that today, in this moment, voters in Montana thought that Republicans better represented their interests than Democrats. And I think it really is as simple as that.
And how exactly that's going to translate beyond the TV ads and the campaign talking points we see from these statewide election officials, the direct impact of that is really going to be seen in the 2021 legislative session. That's when very specific policies impacting specific counties, you know, impacting specific sections of the economy, that's when that's going to play out.
What's interesting is on the campaign trail, we hear about bipartisanship as being a core value. We hear from voters that compromise and finding common ground is a really big value.
I'm a Republican, but I don't vote just straight across the line on Republican values. It'd be nice if everyone worked together a little more and Democrats got some of their way sometimes too, and we could compromise on some things, but there's certain things that you can't compromise on.
I'm hoping for some sort of shake up so that when things land, we have a little bit more change and a little bit more, I don't want to say cohesion, because there's nothing wrong with conflict, but maybe see a little bit more get done and passed within the legislation.
It'd be nice if people just started taking care of their neighbors and their friends and working together more for what's best for everybody.
But with these big Republican sweeps, I think the idea of compromise gets really murky, that compromise for some folks, when they get into it, it means coming over to my side and seeing it from my point of view and not really giving an inch. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out in the session and kind of where Montana is tugged.
And looking at that big picture level, sometimes Montana recently has been considered a purple state for, you know, how, you know, we elect Democratic governors, how we send, senators like John Tester to the Senate. This might be an indication that that's changing and Montana could actually be red, straight up conservative.
I sort of imagine that a lot of Democrats woke up today feeling much the way that Republicans woke up feeling in 2006 and 2008. And Denny Rehberg, who was the lone congressman at the time, Republican congressman for Montana, was the only statewide elected Republican for several years. And so Montana is, I think, a conservative-leaning state, to be sure. I think that 3 to 4% baked-in number that my Republican analyst that I was talking to referenced, I think, is probably accurate. But it's also an independent state, and we do see these swings. So I think, again, this is a moment in time. In this moment in time, voters felt that Republicans were best positioned to represent their interests, which I think were primarily economic. And we're going to see in 2 years what the reaction to that is.
You all have been covering Montana and Montana politics for years, but from doing this project, did you learn anything new?
I would say that covering state politics for daily news, it's really kind of a horse race, and it's easy to get lost up in the day-to-day details and kind of lose sight of the bigger picture. And when you do a project like Shared State and you really step back and kind of trace those through lines and connect the dots, like from history 50 years ago up until today, it helped Montana kind of click into focus for me in a way that it hadn't. You know, I didn't grow up here. I've been here for the bulk of my adult life. But I'm just fascinated by how much more I have left to learn about Montana and how it keeps changing even as I think I start to understand it.
All of this has made me just increasingly curious about the state, about the people in it, about the voters, about the elected officials. It's a pretty awesome place to be a reporter and a storyteller.
Yeah, for me, I don't know that I necessarily learned anything profound about Montana other than it really reinforced what I sort of always sensed about Montana, which is that there's a lot more that we have in common than not. And one of the things that I think these elections really highlight is the fact that, people spend a lot of money trying to find ways to highlight our differences. And I think that this podcast, I'm proud of the fact that this podcast, I think, sought out to sort of find more of the common ground that we actually share.
Thanks to all of you for being a part of this project, and I hope we get to talk again soon.
Thanks, sir.
It's been a joy.
Thanks. It's been a lot of fun, Sarah.
Shared State is a production of Montana Free Press, Yellowstone Public Radio, and Montana Public Radio. We're edited by Nick Mott and produced by Mara Silvers. Editorial assistance comes from Nikki Ouellette, John Adams, Corin Cates Carney, and Brad Tyre. Huge thanks to all the reporters who took on these episodes. Brad Tyre, Mara Silvers, Rachel Kramer, Charles Bolte, Eric Dietrich, Caitlin Nicholas, Nick Mott, and John Adams. Those episodes wouldn't have been possible without all the guests and experts who made time to talk to us. Thank you. Another big thanks to the people who helped us record the preamble that plays at the top of the show. To Kristen Tessman for helping us apply for grant funding to make this production possible. Josh Burnham and Claire Tevesu for helping us with our social media. Clint McFarland, who made the beautiful art for this series. Our music came from Blue Dot Sessions. Let us know what you thought about this project. And if you want to hear more journalism like this, you can find contact information for our reporters, editors, and general newsrooms on our websites. I'm Sarah Aronson. Thank you so much for listening.
And Sarah, can we still be friends when this is all over?
Sure.
I really enjoyed working with you, Sarah. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
The rest of you too, but she's the new one.
Oh, I am the new one. Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye.